We didn't have the luxury of a soft opening. So we're packed, there are lines, it's hard getting the product out of the kitchen because we really don't know how to do volume yet. And we're learning how to do service. So we're pissing off people right and left, and it took a while to settle down. Unfortunately, it did, but it definitely was a double-edged sword. And we were in the papers. We were in the media all the time. There are cameras there.
From Washington, D.C., this is The Tightrope. I'm your host, Dan Smolin. Our mission on this podcast is to help you realize your dreams of doing meaningful work. Here you'll meet and be inspired by amazing people who overcame great odds. You'll discover what sparked them, how they explored work opportunities, the strategies that they employed to ensure career success, and the actions they boldly took to make it all happen. You'll also meet esteemed and nationally recognized thought leaders who are helping people like you to develop work skill, experience and leadership, and seize opportunity from a changing world so that your beautiful work dreams turn into reality. Together, let's turn work meaningful, for meaningful work is the future of work. In this second part of a two-part episode, we discover how one entrepreneur dared, not once, but twice, to disrupt the established food scene in a major American city. As we continue our conversation with Billy Jacobs and our shared lifelong friend Stu Katz, we learn how Billy pairs New Haven-style pizza with award-winning ales crafted by Pieces brewmeister Jonathan Cutler. We also discuss Billy's provocative branding, advertising and marketing, his successful re-entry into the bagel business, and his mission to make the work done by his people truly meaningful. Our conversation, recorded in August 2019, picks up in Billy Jacobs' Chicago home.
How did you come up with the idea of merging a high-quality brew pub with this amazing pizza experience?
I had already thought about bringing a New Haven-style pizza to Chicago.
Right.
Started there. My friend Matt Brynaldson was running operations for Goose Island. I met Matt because he was playing Ultimate Frisbee, which I was playing at the time. And Matt approached me after a tournament with a beer, and he said, "Try this." And I tried it. And he said, "It's a whip beer." And then he said, you know, with a gleam in his eye, he said, "We can make this." So Matt was suggesting that we get together and we do a concept together. This is 90, I think it must have been 98. And that's really where it started. And I'm thinking, you know, great pizza, great beer under one roof. You know, if we can execute it the right way, it should take off. So the you know, it's two incredible products. And he brought the great beer and told me to hire my award-winning brewer, Jonathan. So Matt's not the brewer. Matt's not the brewer. He went off to California where he runs Firestone Walker. So he's the guy behind Firestone Walker and has created those great beers and that incredible brand.
So Jonathan Cutler, tell us about Jonathan Cutler. How did he come to be part of the Peace family?
I was about to hire a brewer who was in Denver, I think. And then Jonathan, who worked for Matt at Goose, was brewing in Chico, California for Sierra Nevada. He caught wind of this concept, and Jonathan wanted to get back to Chicago.
Is he from here?
Yeah, he's from Libertyville, right outside of Chicago. And so he calls Matt. He said, "Matt, you know I'm the guy. Get me that job."
Oh, he wanted it.
He just discovered we're about to hire this other person. And so Matt says, you know, interview Jonathan. And Jonathan and I spoke for an hour on the phone. And that was it. And he's been our award-winning brewer since we opened.
So in doing my research about Peace, one word that comes up is pairings. Mm-hmm. You pair pizza with beer. Mm-hmm. That's like an art form.
Absolutely. It's like pairing wine with food, right?
But yes, in a Nouvelle Cuisine restaurant, pairing a nice beef dish with a Saint-Emilion red. Yeah, absolutely. This is a fairly new thing, I think, to do it with pizza. And yeah, you've just rocked it.
Absolutely. you have to create the image and give it to the customer, right? It's all about that experience.
So you're building imagery, and you're, and as ambassadors to the process, you're kind of using word visuals to...
Exactly. You know, and that's, you know, people enjoy that. That's the experience.
So we talked about this incredible piece of product that you have, Jonathan's influence as your brewmeister. Mm-hmm. But let's talk about the third leg of the table here, and that's your famous business partner. Tell the world who that is.
Rick Nielsen. Is that who you're talking about? Cheap Trick.
There you go. Yeah. How'd that come about?
So I was raising money, and this is another tie to Ultimate Frisbee, because I was captaining my summer league team, and I had my private placement memorandum, which allowed me to go out and raise money for this concept. So I told my team, I said, listen, I'm opening a new restaurant. You know, I segued out of bagels, sold the company, and I've got this new concept, and I'm raising money. And if any of you know of people with money who might be interested in investing, please let me know. So a woman on my team, Joy Burns, spoke up, and she said, I've got a friend in Rockford. Days later, I contact Joy, and one, she was a little surprised that I actually followed up on it. And she had me send my business plan to her friend, David Anderson. And the Andersons are a prominent Rockford family. I think that they're in the packaging business, and they've got the Oriental Gardens. They're wonderful people. Send it to Dave. Dave shows the business plan to his good buddy, Rick Nielsen, Cheap Trick. And they had invested on a couple things together. And Rick looks at this and goes, this looks really very interesting. Here's a rock and roll guy looking at a business opportunity in a restaurant. Needless to say, restaurants are very risky investments.
Oh, yeah.
Very risky. So I was shaking all trees. So Rick and Dave came, and I took them to the space. There was nothing there, right? It was a shell, but it was a cool space with this, you know, it's a Beau Trust building, and it's got a skylight, you know, but it was really dirt. So you had to really be creative and see the vision, and both of them did. And we had a beer. This is back when Rick was drinking, which he's not anymore,
yeah,
at the Northside restaurant, which is around the corner on Damon, which is still there and has been there. So I talked to them about the market, the neighborhood, what's happening there. And
well, what was Wicker Park like back in those days?
Very sketchy.
Sketchy.
Sketchy. You know, I would say there were, you know, prostitutes and pimps and drug addicts walking up and down North Avenue. And that was happening until, I don't know, 2006 or 7. Very sketchy. And I could see things changing in the market, good things happening. There was the Double Door, which is the music venue on Damon, the north side. Not a lot in between. But the artists were living there. And, you know, when you want to invest in real estate, find out where the artists are living, because they know inexpensive places to live that have character. And Wicker Park was full of character.
Do you think Rick was jamming on that? Picking up on that?
Probably, because he was familiar with the Double Door,
yeah,
where he had played.
I would imagine he would be.
You know?
Yeah.
There was one other very important aspect, which was not long after Peace opened, the MTV reality show called The Real World came to Chicago to do a season in Chicago, and very conveniently for Bill, the house or apartment that all these young people were living in and being filmed 24 hours a day was right across the street from Peace. And now Bill can tell you what happened next.
Do tell.
Yeah, so they were the Chicago celebrities that summer, living across the street, getting jobs in the city, and two of them got jobs at Peace. They came over and like, come on in, what are you? You don't even have to fill out the application.
So you're like a rock and roll destination now.
Which was a double-edged sword. And I was talking about this because we didn't have the luxury of a soft opening. So we're packed, there are lines, it's hard getting the product out of the kitchen because we really don't know how to do volume yet, and we're learning how to do service. So we're pissing off people right and left, and it took a while to settle down. Unfortunately, it did, but it definitely was a double-edged sword. And we were in the papers. We were in the media all the time. There are cameras there.
Wow.
There are people coming in to get a glimpse. We're on the show. There are people get a glimpse of these kids.
So you're getting what the kids called earned media.
Right.
You didn't have to pay cash money for any of this. It's covered in the local news.
Yes. Tanya from Walla Walla, Washington, was a server. And she had some serving experience, but she was on those reality TV shows for a while.
How did Rick feel about the early days? Was he like, oh, geez, what have I got myself into? Or was he
seeing that anyone who makes an investment in a restaurant probably thinks that. So it did take a little while, not all that long, to start, you know, sending out dividends. The turning point for Peace and its success was when we opened up the takeout and delivery space, which we call Peace Out. We opened up that in 2008, early 2008, and I had in my lease that if one of the other tenants went out of business, that the landlord would have to offer it to me. So the boutique next door went out, and my landlord said, would you like the space? I'm like, absolutely, and took it to specifically for delivery and takeout, because we couldn't do delivery because we didn't have the capacity. Takeout was a nightmare because there was only one entrance, one place to pick up your pizza, and that's from the host, and it created a bottleneck there. So you'd come in to get your pizza. If you're a customer waiting to be sat, there was a swarm of people there.
Oh, boy.
So by opening up the annex next door, and it added lots of business.
You'd have to be pretty enterprising to be doing takeout. Most, I mean, what do you think about Chinese restaurants? Usually have somebody in the family who's delivering food within a five-mile radius. Now, I mean, our daughter is 18, and that's how she eats. If DoorDash or Uber Eats covers them, that's how she gets her food. You were on the cutting edge of that.
Yeah, and that's kind of interesting because when Caviar and DoorDash approached us and said, hey, we want to do this, we're like, why do we want to give you a percentage when we have the infrastructure in place with all these drivers? So fortunately, we worked out a pretty good deal with those folks, and they've been good partners.
So talk to us about your delivery business. I would imagine the scale potential is pretty good. I mean, you're delivering high quality food to offices and places downtown. What's that like? And are you able to get them into the restaurant? I mean, how does that all work? Do people who are trying your food in the restaurant first decide they want to order in, or is it the other way around? Or
I think you get it both ways, without question. You know, but learning the delivery business was like starting a new business, and you know, we learned it. We made mistakes. You know, we changed our game plan. We adjusted at halftime, and you know, we figured it out. And that it's a wonderful business. You know, but if you take out, it doesn't matter if you take out a Peace Pizza or Sally's Pizza, a pizza taken out is always compromised a little bit.
So,
you know, you're going to lose a little bit because the pizza goes into a box and it sits in this environment of heat and moisture.
Yeah.
So it affects the crust. But with that said, if you're starting out with a very high quality product, you're still going to get something that's very good. And it's better than any other takeout pizza there is here in Chicago.
So do you measure like your door-to-door time and how long it takes you to get
yes.
to?
Yep.
I don't know if you did this at BU, but Mr. Katz and I used to order a trunk full of half cooks from Sally's to bring up to IC, which was met with great joy. And we'd throw those bad boys in the oven, and the product was fantastic.
Yeah. We used to take them on the plane from Sally's when we were in the bagel business and fire them up in the bagel oven.
Okay, so we're thinking, hey, you know, this could be like a business. So I'm going to ask you, I'm sure every week goes by where somebody with a lot of cash in their pocket says, hey, Bill, let's make this a product we can sell in, Trader Joe's or something. I don't know. What have you said to him?
No.
Why?
Well, you know, I get approached almost every day about doing other places. Someone approached me one time about putting Peace Pizza in Costco. You know, seriously, years ago. I just like to stay focused and true to the product. You know, it's not about, I'd like to throw in this caveat, I have the ability to say, no, I don't want to do anymore because I make a fine living. And I'm very fortunate to do that. But more places create more challenges and complications. And I like the simplicity of one place, knowing my people, knowing many of my customers, and knowing that the product is great and that we're doing right by our employees and right by our customers. So it's all about focus. It's not about doing too much or trying to be the biggest or trying to create an empire, because I personally have no interest in doing that.
Right.
I want to run a great business.
Right. In my work and doing this podcast now over 2 years, one of the trends that I've seen both in how communities operate, but also in how people go after work, is the paradigm shift is called localism. And the idea behind it is kind of a reaction to everything in Washington is totally effed up. So if we do it closer to home, it'll work better. I know in Chicago, that's definitely happening. People can say all they want about Cook County and Chicago, but this place has never looked better. People seem happy. They want to live here, and they want to work here. And they're thinking about their community as opposed to dominating a U.S. market. So in a way, you are on the cutting edge of that. More people want to have a tie to their community. We've gotten detached from people, you know, and especially if you're a car commuter, you may not talk to people very much. So the fact that you've created this sense of community in a neighborhood of Chicago that 10, 15 years ago was really dicey is where I think a lot of people want to go. And the meaningful work that they're deriving is from places like yours where they're part of a family. When I first started recruiting, people bifurcated their existence. Mm-hmm. I work and I deal with those people, but they're not necessarily my friends.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Now, it's really becoming more of a communal event. So I want to compliment you on
Thank
that.
Thank you.
I think that's really, again, you're on the cutting edge of something that I think more communities are gonna do in big cities and in small.
Part of that community building is using the restaurant as a way to support charitable efforts in the community. So he started by just donating a few pizzas here and there, but it has grown into much larger collaborations with nonprofit organizations and other teaming up with other restaurants to support nonprofit organizations. So I feel like that's another thing you probably would want to talk a little bit about.
So yeah, let's talk about that. How does philanthropy play into your success?
Well, it's integral to who we are. It's integral to our place in the community. And we are very fortunate to, you know, to have this vibrant community, have this wonderful restaurant and be successful. And it's our responsibility to give back. So we hope that other operators share this. It's something that I learned years ago. You know, and I remember my dad saying, hey, give away some bagels, you know, get involved with the community. Never stop that. But we have taken it to a different level. You know, we've always given pizza to worthy organizations. But to get to Stu's point, we've created a relationship with an organization called Pilot Light Chefs. We do these collaborations every January, February, March. Each chef creates their own pizza, and we give 10% of the sales to Pilot Light. We've raised over $44,000 over the past few years for them. And they go into the Chicago public schools with a curriculum of food and nutrition, and these chefs get involved there, and they go in and they teach the kids.
couple other questions I wanted to ask, and again, another aspect that I find refreshing is your collaboration with other restaurants, but other chefs. And I think about Doug Soane, mm-hmm. which probably your most famous collaboration, wouldn't you say? Who is he, and what did he bring to Peace?
My buddy Hot Doug, who became my buddy after we did the collaboration. We really didn't know each other. We knew of each other. We weren't close friends.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you the story of how this thing evolved. My friends in Honey Butter Fried Chicken did the first collaboration. It was just a one-off, 1 month, 1 year. And I called them up and said, how about we put your chicken on the pizza? And they're like, yeah, absolutely, let's do it. And let's give away some money. And I said, pick an organization. They picked Pilot Chefs. The next year, I got Steph Izard, who was the first woman to win Top Chef. And chefs and Steph said, absolutely, I'm in. And I spoke with her publicist, Katie Darnaby. You said, you want to take this program the right direction, add one more, do three. And okay, I said, Katie, good idea. Who should we approach? She said, how about Hot Dog? Hot Dog just retired. Hot Dog had this incredibly, wildly successful hot dog encased meats emporium in Avondale, in this really offbeat location. Wildly successful, nationally, internationally known, small place. People flock there. Anthony Bourdain would go there. All these famous people would go there. So I approached Hot Dog, and I wasn't so sure that he would do it because he just retired. Responded immediately, said, I'm in. Let's do it. After that, we became best friends. The program has just been an incredible success. And we go to ball games. He came to the ball game with us yesterday. He's one of my best friends.
So we didn't ask about the name Peace. That's brilliant. And the imagery that you created with your logo is brilliant. I mean, sometimes the most powerful things are the simplest. Did you think to go to simplicity, or did it just come to you, the name?
They say simplicity is the ultimate sophistication, right?
Right.
And it's true. So Jim and his partner were at Lear Burnett when I took the concept to them, and I said, this is it. It's pizza. It's beer. Come up with an identity. And these guys came back with one, and it was it. It wasn't like usually when these guys do pitches, they'll show you different ideas, but this is like, this is it, you know?
And
so they had the board with the peace sign, and they had a, you know, and they had a storyline.
Okay, but that's to your credit, though, because a lot of business owners, if they have an idea for a name, they overthink it. Yeah. And then when they sit down with the creative director, it's like it's been thrown into a meat grinder.
Yeah.
If it's simple, right, and if they understand the value proposition, you get this amazing logo. So congratulations for that.
Thank you. It really is. I don't take it for granted even 18 years later. It is who we are. It is really is brilliant. I don't take credit for it. Jim and his partner did an incredible job with it. It's recognizable, you know, you see it, you know what it is.
That's fabulous.
You know?
So let's talk about your marketing. Now, I don't know if you guys remember, in New Haven on Broadway, there was a place called Blossom Shop.
Of course.
Okay.
Yeah.
Eddie, the guy who ran Blossom Shop, was a brilliant marketer. Now, this will kind of clue our listeners how old the three of us are. But when the Paris peace talks were going on, Eddie decided to do a ceasefire sale, and he put a big peace sign on that front window, and he created all this buzz. And my father, who was in retail in New Haven, thought that was fantastic. He'd never seen anything like that. I mean, who does that?
Yeah.
It's almost like breaking a wall. I see you as being sort of that kind of a marketer. So you've taken chances. Almost like breaking a fourth wall in theater to have, like, take the audience member by the nape of the neck and say, listen.
You have to do that, and you have to do it with irreverence and a sense of humor, right?
Right.
Get people to think, you know? You don't knock them over the head and say, this is great pizza. You know, people can figure that out, but you do it in an intelligent way. Make them think, make them connect the dots, and be humorous.
So what's your favorite campaign that you've done? Social media or traditional media? or experiential marketing?
You know, we've done, we've done so much.
Was there a time when you guys like went a little too far?
Oh, sure. One was for when we were in the bagel business. And Jim had this image of Jesus. And it read, "What Jesus did with a loaf of bread, we can do with a dozen bagels."
Oh my gosh.
Needless to say, I said, "Jim, we really can't do that." He pushes the envelope.
You'd have the Archdiocese of Chicago all over you. That's not the kind of publicity you want.
And for Peace, you've had things like someone urinating a Peace logo in the snow. And
oh, yeah. Every year. And the great thing about technology now is that you can create these videos and you can put them out pretty quickly. So every year we do a holiday video. And this one year, Jim went out in the snow.
Oh, my God.
Whistling White Christmas or something like that. Carrying a growler of beer. And then he stops, and all you see is his back, and you hear him whistling, and you see the jug. And then he stops, and you hear his zipper drop down.
Oh, my gosh.
And then you hear it coming out. Mm-hmm. And then the camera zooms in on the yellow Peace logo in the snow.
But I got to imagine, even what you've gotten away with, which is kind of subversive, kind of in a Looney Tunes sort of way, has got to be effective. I mean, it's getting people to pay attention, right?
Absolutely.
I mean, who follows rules?
So what if we offend a person or two? It's, you know, you got to have a sense of humor, you know?
Yeah, but there's so many restaurants. There's so much content out there. I think if you do it well, and I think by doing it this way, you have to do trial and error.
Yeah.
You're going to fall flat on your face doing something. And okay, fine.
Yeah.
That's what an artist does.
Yeah.
Yes. Let's get to Bro Bagel real quick, because you got back into the bagel business.
Yes.
And why did you do that?
Well, about 7 years ago, I had the good fortune of buying the building that Peace is in. And I had tenants. It was a salon. And they approached me and they asked if they could get out of their lease early. And I'm like, yeah, absolutely. I had always thought about bringing back the bagels in that space. And that was really the moment in which I was able to do it. So 5 years ago, I brought back the bagels in a very small storefront on the west side of Peace in the same building. So the bagels are back as Bro Bagel, not as Jacob's Brothers, because we sold the name Jacob's Brothers to Big Apple Bagels. I think Bro Bagel is a fantastic name, and the product is the same great bagel that we made between 1983 and 1999.
So where the pizza is paired with great brew, bagels are paired with great coffee?
Great coffee, great juices, great cream cheese spreads that we make there, and great sandwiches.
So I got one more question, and it has to do with this idea of meaningful work, which over my many years has been boiled down to work that is profound, often helps the planet in some way, very often helps people in communities, so it helps support them and in their needs, but above all else is fun to do. And I think you've kind of gotten to that way. You may not be running a company that's putting in solar panels, but you're having fun, you're running a local business, you're supporting 125 or more people, they are part of your family, and you're satisfied with it. So if you were to talk to you back in college, you know, entering BU about, you know, where you'd be, or maybe just anybody else today who wants to follow that kind of blissful path towards meaningful work, what pearls of wisdom would you offer them, Bill?
Don't be afraid to make mistakes.
Stick
to your concept, no product, your concept. Learn and just recognize that one person does not have all the answers, but you can get there by recognizing what your weaknesses are, what your strengths are, and you can support yourself by surrounding yourself with people who can shore up your weaknesses. And I think that I've done a pretty good job of that, because I do know that I don't have all the answers, but I know that I can find those answers by relying on my people.
So Billy Jacobs and Stu Katz, thank you for joining us and walking the tightrope. Bill, if our listeners wanted to find you, how would they find you on social media?
Our website is peacechicago.com. peacechicago.com. And that is also true for our Facebook page, Peace Chicago, and our Instagram page, and our Twitter page.
Very good. Gentlemen, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Again, our thanks go out to Billy Jacobs and our shared lifelong friend Stu Katz for walking the tightrope with us. And also a special shout out to Billy's dog Desi for making an appearance. Our success is your success, but we cannot build our community without your help and support. So if you haven't done so already, please join the Dan Smolin Experience to get our newsletter offering information, tips, and hacks to help you succeed in doing meaningful work. To sign up, simply click the Subscribe to the Dan Smolin Experience newsletter button on our homepage at dansmolin.com. Fill out the short form, then click the Subscribe button at the bottom of the page, and you'll be on your way. Also, become a regular listener of the Tightrope with Dan Smolin podcast. You can easily find current and past episodes by keywording The Tightrope with Dan Smolin at Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, on our website at dansmolin.com, or wherever you choose to listen. And don't forget to show your support on Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, and Twitter. You can locate our social media buttons at the upper right corner of our webpages at dansmolin.com. From Washington, D.C., this is The Tightrope. I'm your host, Dan Smolin. And do remember this. Our best days lie ahead. Have a great and successful week, everyone.